So one of my friends told me the story of his first camping experience. He was told camping was fun, and it was his church friends who persuaded him to go when they heard that he had never gone camping before. But the good intention was suspect when they got to the campsite parking lot, and they offered to carry his pack if he would carry this water cooler-sized bottle of water. And so then he couldn't help but wonder if they had invited him to come on the trip to be their water mule. So here's my friend. He's carrying this huge bottle of water. They walked and walked and walked, and it started to get dark, until at some point, the person who was supposed to know the way admitted that he was completely lost. And then my friend with a big bottle of water said he just could not walk another step. So they decided they would just pitch the tent on the side of the trail. It was a horrible night. It started to rain, and water would run off the slope into the tent, so no one slept. And as soon as it was light enough, they packed up and got ready to go again and to try and actually find the campsite again. And while they were packing up, they got some strange looks from some other campers who had passed them on the trail, and they didn't know why, other than that it's sort of odd to find people camping outside a campsite. So once they were ready, my friend picked up the bottle of water again. They walked not even a few minutes, turned the corner, and there's the campsite. So they felt like fools. And that's why they got those funny looks on the trail. Now, if they had only managed to go just a little further, they would say, they would have gotten to where they were going. Except in the moment, truth be told, they've had it. The pain got too much. So it's a funny story to us because we know what they didn't know. They thought it was funny too when they told me the story. Well, not the guy who was supposed to know the way and then got them lost, and not my friend who had to carry that huge water bottle. And as far as I know, he never went camping again. And the story is funny because knowing what we know, we're tempted to think that this could never happen to us, unless we have an experience in our lives where we have felt that level of pain. Pain enough to stop us in our tracks, enough to throw us off course. And then we would find it harder to say, why didn't they just keep going that last few steps? Well, they didn't because it hurt too much. So last time I was here, I kind of compared our lives with the Mars rover that went to Mars as an analogy of the journey of a gazillion tweaks. Like rover, we're trying to get to Mars, whatever we think our ultimate purpose in life is. And we have to keep checking if we are on course and to see if we need to make little course adjustments if we're going to get to where we want to get to. But there's one problem with that analogy, one gross simplification. Rover doesn't feel pain. Rover never gets tired or bored. The payload never gets too heavy, like a huge water bottle that's cutting into our shoulder. Rover never feels regret for coming on the trip because its feet are blistering and it just cannot take another step. Rover is a machine. It goes and goes and goes and goes. We're not machines. We feel pain. One of my favorite lines from a movie comes from The Princess Bride. The farm boy says to the princess, "Life is pain, princess," he says. "Anyone who tells you otherwise is trying to sell you something." So Psalm 121:29 is another one of these songs of ascent, where three or four times a year during a Jewish festival time, pilgrims making their way up to the temple would sing these psalms to prepare to worship, which makes Psalm 129 really odd. Because instead of priming his worship pump with grateful or happy thoughts, he's getting worked up. It's the angriest ascent song. And he's getting worked up because he's remembering the painful history of his people. We don't know what got him thinking about ancient history. Maybe something painful is happening in his life at the moment, like a bad day at the office, and he's feeling oppressed or mistreated. This is how I think a counselor would explain it. The poetry paints quite a graphic picture of suffering. The words actually feels like fingernails on a chalkboard, right? It's a farming imagery, which makes me think the writer is a farmer. He says, the pain his people has suffered feels like bad men with plows making long tracks of furrows on his back. That sounds painful, yeah. Now, he's not exaggerating. In Berlin, there is an Assyrian museum, and there's a relief on the wall that records when the Assyrians conquered the Jewish people as the only one in the world. And it shows a couple of soldiers doing to a Jewish man what a hunter would do to a bear that he shot, except the bear would be dead and this Jewish man is alive. So the psalm is possibly written in time when the Jewish people were slaves of this empire or the one after it, which is just as cruel. Now, it's not news to us that the world can be very cruel. They're right now very cruel, inhumane things happening to people. But the pain described by the psalmist is happening to people who are supposed to be the people belonging to God. And that raises some difficult, uncomfortable questions about what that means to be the people of God. I mean, what did Abraham understand as life having God as his God? When God offered to be his God and he and his descendants would be God's people, did Abraham think that means life would be easier, pain-free? Would Abraham have trusted God and said yes if he knew in a few generations his descendants would end up as slaves in Egypt, forced to make mud bricks for warehouses and grain silos? And after the Egyptians, there would be more oppressors, one after another, like the Assyrians. In the Roman Empire, the Jewish people had to pay, just for them, a tax on candles that they used on the Sabbath, a tax on kosher meat, and something called tolerance tax, just for being Jewish, apparently. So when our psalmist writes these words about all the people who plow tracks of furrows on their backs, he doesn't even know about the Hitler chapter of the history. I read last week that there were 49,000 concentration camps in Europe during the Holocaust. The psalmist feels something like what some African-American movie stars feel when they sign up for those TV shows that trace their ancestry. And they hear what a great-great-great-grandfather went through as a slave on a cotton plantation. The movie stars always cry because it's so sad and awful. And what the psalmist feels is exactly what the Jewish movie stars feel when they discover their grandparents came from a village in Europe where the entire town was killed by a Nazi firing squad. And no wonder their grandparents refused to talk about the past. Just like I can't get my parents to talk about the childhood in Hong Kong just before World War II. Because the thing we do with really painful experiences when we can't make sense of them is that we push them into a mental closet, we shut the door, and we never want that door open again. Pain changes us. Pain can make us soft or hard to other people. Like those two guys who fought over a parking space a couple of weeks ago. And then this week, there was a brawl in an old folks' home in Ottawa over seating for bingo. Now, all of these hooligans are probably very nice people to the friends and family, but load any one of us up with enough pain, we go nuts and we lose our bearing. Pain changes the way we make choices. If that rover to Mars has a sensor that is not working properly, it's going to be off course, and it wouldn't know it. Sometimes our broken pain sensors make us take the long way around something or not leave the house at all so we can avoid running into more pain. Sometimes our broken pain sensors talk us into thinking a bad thing is normal or it's not that bad or it's not really happening. And so then we make decisions that seem bizarre to people who are not feeling the pain we feel because our sensors are off and theirs are working. Like pouncing on someone for taking our parking space or our lucky bingo chair. And pain changes our relationship with God. Pain makes some people conclude there's no God. Some people blame God for the pain. And some people cling to God when they're in pain. And it's not easy to know which way we'll end up with the pain that we carry. So 300 years ago, this German philosopher named Gottfried Leibniz made up this word, theodicy. And it's not the name of a roller coaster ride. It's the equation of our problem with pain. On the one side, we believe God is loving and all-powerful. And on the other side of the equation, there's our experience of pain. And this equation cannot be solved. If God is not loving or not all-powerful, then we can blame God for our suffering, for not caring or not able to help us in our pain. But there's no way to explain pain if God is both caring and all-powerful. And so there's no solution to our pain problem, just tension, like a rock in our shoe that we can't get out. My problem with pain is simpler. I wish the God's gospel is that God plucks us out of the painful world so we didn't have to hurt at all at his children, but it's not what he does. Instead, he expects me to learn to carry pain and to learn to stay soft and to walk with other people through the pain. Think about the Jewish Exodus story. It's a story of rescue, right? God rescuing his people from slavery. They were not instantly transported like Star Trek to the promised land. Instead, it's a 40-year-long tedious trek through the wilderness between Egypt and Canaan. And this is what God calls rescue. And so, the challenge for us is how do we keep choosing the good path in the harsh condition of the wilderness? Remember Psalm 1, I mentioned this last time, is a picture of a fork in the road where one path represents living the way God wants us to, that bears fruit, and the other path is a dead end that leaves all kinds of damage in our wake. How do we keep choosing the good road, the high road, keep making good choices in the midst of very painful experiences? And bullies. I took a course once where the class was divided into four teams. And each team was given a box of spaghetti. And we had a certain amount of time to build the highest tower we could. So when the time ran out, one of the team had the highest tower. They win. But then the professor said, why is it that one of us didn't think in the last seconds of the contest to go over to the team with the highest tower and push it over? So it was supposed to be a lesson to get us to think about the unspoken rules that we live by and how there are people who don't play by the rules. Now, the teacher says he gave the course once where there was a guy who knew the answer, and he actually did it. The guy thought he was helping the teacher make the point, but he created so much trauma that he didn't realize the price of his little stunt. The class couldn't get over what he did, so for the rest of that class, no one talked to him. This guy is what we are up against in life. How to deal with people like him when they are our parent, a teacher, or a boss, or to somebody. The pain they cause us like plow tracks on our backs. And how not to throw in the towel and just become that guy. So, this is about the time in the sermon where it would be nice if I say something to you very smart and helpful about how to carry your pain for the long haul. All right? So, let me tell you, I got nothing. I don't know anything to tell you that makes it easier for you or the pain you carry, so sorry to disappoint. I don't feel one bit qualified to instruct you on how you should carry your pain. I mean, what do I know about the water cooler-sized bottle of whatever you carry through the door when you walk through this morning? The last singing teacher I had, she taught out of a church in Richmond. I found her in a phone book. I went to her and I said, you know, can you help me how to reach higher notes? So we worked on this for a few months, and I wasn't getting anywhere. And after a few months, I literally didn't know what to do, what she was telling me, and she was running out of ideas of what to tell me. So finally, one day she said, you know, I think you will know how to do it when you figure it out. I go, what? I mean, this is a weird thing for a teacher to say. And also, I'm paying for these lessons, right? But you know, I did eventually figure it out, and maybe she was right that I had to be the one to figure it out. So here we are. I tell you, you are the one to figure out how to carry your pain. It's between you and God, and you will know how to do it when you figure it out. You're welcome. Now, I suppose when we figure out how to carry pain, we will know how to give God the benefit of the doubt, to believe he knows what he's doing. We will figure out how it might be comforting knowing he's present with us in the pain, even though we might not feel him. And the pain is not an indicator that God has left us or forgotten us. I expect when we figure out how to carry pain, we will finally realize the benefit of spiritual training. You know, all the times when people tell us to read our Bibles and learn to pray and keep Sabbath, and for example. Spiritual training is like squirrels storing nuts for the winter. Once winter comes, it's a little late to start, even though you still have to do it. Somebody says it takes 10,000 hours of practice to get good at doing something. The first 6 months of singing lessons were boring and hard. My teacher, who doesn't say much anyways, would say, oh, that was a bad sound, and that was a good sound, and all sounds the same to me. And it's sort of second nature now, after years of practice, and I realized there's no getting around that first 6 months. I think when we figure out how to carry pain, we will know how to pray honest prayers. I've been praying since I was 5, so I've said a lot of things to God in my life. And what I have discovered recently is that I have this prayer auto mode. So this is where I can blab, form letter kind of sentences to God while my mind is thinking about something else. So when I catch myself in auto mode, I would stop and ask, what is the most honest thing I can say to God right now? And then when I speak honestly to God, something happens inside. I feel softer, and the words, instead of coming from my head, comes from someplace deeper, and God feels closer rather than far away. And there's another thing that I think happens when we learn to carry pain well. It's this kind of alertness to God and his presence, even when we're in pain. I like to think there's some special provision from God for people who are struggling. Something he reserved for people in pain. There's a 13th century Persian poet who says, the wound is the place where the light enters you. I can remember a few times in my life when I was hurting and somehow God showed himself in something or someone, like that quote. So last week, I was putting off working on this sermon on pain because I was reluctant to feel the pain I needed to feel if I'm going to write an honest sermon. So I procrastinated by watching Netflix. I was watching this Australian murder mystery, and out of nowhere, this actor says, the wound is the place where the light enters you. It reminds me when Paul says how it is in our weakness we discover God is strong. And that line of Persian poetry in an Australian TV murder mystery feels like God winking at me and then plopping down on a couch next to me to sit with me with my complicated pain feelings. And I expect when we figure out how to carry pain well, we will know who the people who are good to be with when we're in pain. and how to be good with people in pain. Somebody says good church friends know how to be midwives to each other through pain and not an epidural. That's a pain-numbing medicine for women giving birth. People who are not helpful with pain will tell us we shouldn't feel what we feel, like we have choice. They say things like it's not so bad or pretend it's not happening. They're like people who talk to us in movies. They make us miss the important parts. People who are good with pain don't try to avoid it. They're not frightened by people in pain. They help us face our pain and hold our hands as we face what we need to. And they encourage us to focus on what's important. They help us to keep breathing by breathing with us. And they give us permission to scream and yell. C.S. Lewis says, all the great religions were first preached and long practiced in a world without chloroform. I hope you know some people who are wise in the way of pain, who are good to be with when you're in pain, or you need to go find yourself some. Just like you need to figure out yourself how to carry your pain with God's help. So, it's all I got. I wish I could be more helpful. The psalm doesn't tell us what our psalmist does with his pain either. That's why it's confusing. He leaves us hanging. His gut reaction to painful memories is to vent his pain. So he curses his oppressors. Apparently, this is how farmers curse. I wish your crop will fail and you will get nothing at harvest. So it's a good thing he's walking up this hill, because hopefully at some point the endorphins kick in and he will calm down some. He may need to buy an extra dove to sacrifice to make up for that curse when he gets to the top. And it's comforting to know that God lets him get that out. He wasn't struck down by lightning. And this poem got past the Psalm Submission Committee. If there's one thing I try to remember to do is never correct anyone when they're venting. Even God seems to understand our need to vent. There's lots of venting psalms, which I take to mean that he's fine with us saying things like this to him in the safety of our prayers. But once the anger passes, then what? The psalm doesn't say. It's one thing to curse when we pray. There are consequences to acting out the curse. And what decision will he then make about his pain? Is he going to go soft, a heart? Is he going to take out his pain on some innocent bystander? And what decision does he make about his relationship with God? Doesn't say. The psalm only invites us to step into his shoes and feel his pain, and then leaves us to make our own choices with our own set of pain. The psalm doesn't tell us what to do about a fork in the road. We have to all find our own way about keeping on and to stay on course so we get to where we're going and land well. In 1 Corinthians 13:13, Paul tells this hurting church about carrying pain and keeping on. He says, until we see God, trust steadily in God, hope unswervingly, love extravagantly. The interesting thing about the image of plow tracks is that on a farm, it's out of these rolls of dirt where things grow. In the Hiroshima memorial, the war memorial, there's a picture of a shrub. After the bombing, people said nothing will grow out of this land for 75 years. But 2 months later, this shrub pushed through the rubble and became a symbol of hope and resilience in extreme suffering. And the words under the picture says, in the green that came back to life among the charred ruins, people recovered their living hope and courage. Even though rotten things happen to us, even though rotten people do things to us to try and ruin us, God can use these circumstances to cultivate fruit in those painful tracts of furrows. But there's no way around. We have to figure out how to bear and carry the pain for God to do what he does. Think of the people in the Bible, like Jacob and Joseph and Moses and David and Job and Paul and even Jesus. They all carry pain, no exceptions. And God did something with that pain in all of them. A couple of my friends would say the worst thing that ever happened to them was the best thing that ever happened to them spiritually. Joseph, in particular, is kind of amazing to me. There's no record of a single vent. He just kept rolling with the unfair stuff that kept coming his way. And instead of being ruined, he learned to hear God, which put him in the right place at the right time to do something that needed doing. We seldom know what God is doing or what God can do in the moment. We only figure it out in hindsight, which really doesn't help us with the pain or make us feel better about it, except to remind us that the wilderness is not our final destination. We just need to get through it to get to where God is taking us. I had a high school PE teacher who said, everybody hates running, but they do it because it feels so good when you stop. So there we are. Nobody likes pain, but life is painful, and God promises he's taking us to where there will be no more pain, so we just have to hang on until that happens, when the pain stops, and we will know how good it feels. The last time I went up to Chief was the last time because it got really hard compared to the first couple of times. And about halfway up, when I was stopping again to catch my breath, this group of elderly Chinese people, Japanese people, this group of elderly Japanese people passed me, and they were clipping along like a stroll in the country. And then when I got to the rock, my calf suddenly started cramping badly. So I fell over on a tuft of grass holding my leg. There were these two tall strangers next to me who immediately sprang to action at the opportunity to play EMT. While all of this was going on, I was so embarrassed, I was trying not to make eye contact with anyone. So I looked over, and I saw that group of Japanese grandmas and grandpas from earlier. They had beaten me to the top, and they were squatting down, eating ramen out of a ceramic bowl. They apparently brought stoves and everything they needed in their backpacks, and they had enough time to set up, boil water, and make noodles. So here's me holding my leg, and here they are slurping noodles. They win. And they are my heroes. I'm guessing they can tell me a thing or two about resilience and grit. And I imagine some of you are pain masters on their level, and some of us have our work cut out for us. So when I'm in pain, my prayer to God, an honest prayer, is, Lord, have mercy. Now, I want to say it's my favorite prayer, but actually sometimes it's the only thing I know to say. So I would like to give you a moment now to just say the most honest thing you want to God in your head. So take a moment to do that, and then I will pray. Lord, have mercy. Help us to rise above the pain and stay true, persisting in faith, hope, and love, so we can finish well. Amen.